It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
It was a big night in Alabama for the former Auburn coach, a first-time political newcomer, crushing the former attorney general who previously held the Senate seat. Let's go to the race board in the GOP runoff. You see here, Tuberville just over 60% to Jeff Sessions, 39.26%. It was a major victory for President Trump, who heavily backed Tuberville, and he tweeted about it last night saying, "Wow, just called. Tommy Tuberville won big against Jeff Sessions. Will be a great senator for the incredible people of Alabama. Doug Jones is a terrible senator who is just a super liberal puppet for Schumer and Pelosi, represents Alabama poorly. On to November 3rd. At his victory party, the coach turned candidate had this to say.
Democrat Doug Jones is running for re-election with the slogan of One Alabama. What Doug really means is One Liberal Alabama. It is time we have a senator who represents Alabama values. God bless sweet home Alabama.
And you're right, 2-2 was another big win for the president's pick in Texas. The former White House physician Ronnie Jackson, also a first-time candidate, defeating Josh Weingartner. You see here, 55.6% to 44.4%. President tweeting about that as well, saying congratulations to Ronnie Jackson on a big win against a tough and really good opponent. Ronnie will be a fantastic congressman, will represent the wonderful people of the great state of Texas and the USA very well. Proud of you, Ronnie. Meanwhile, in Maine, Democrats choosing Sarah Gideon to face Republican incumbent Susan Collins in one of the most closely watched Senate races in the country. Gideon is the Speaker of Maine's House of Representatives and backed heavily by the DCCC. He's coming into the race with a formidable war chest. We shall see what happens in that race. But all in all, the big takeaway, guys, is it was a huge night for President Trump-picked candidates.
Okay, Sandy Rios with you. That was the news from last night, and it's a stunning victory for former Auburn coach Tommy Tuberville. And I never dreamed he would win by that much, 63% to 37 against a former Attorney General Jeff Sessions. It does show you how upset people are with Jeff Sessions for what he did, his failure to step up to the plate to defend the president. I think that's what that shows, and I also think it probably shows that people want to demonstrate to the president their support, because right now they don't feel that they can do that. They feel that they can't. They feel like their hands are tied because of the strange times in which we live. But there's just a tremendous irony here, because personally, you know, I think that it's ironic to me that probably Senator Jeff Sessions would have more represented President Trump's views on things than Tommy Tuberville will, based on my reading and what I understand. I mean, that doesn't mean, I don't know how Tuberville will be. He's never been in public office. He hasn't been voting in the last several elections. And so I don't think he knows a lot about public policy. I think some of the statements he's made about public policy have been concerning to some of us on immigration and other things. So we'll see. You know, I hope that he's a fast learner, and I hope that he turns out to be the conservative that President Trump hopes he is. Jeff Sessions, I don't know what's going to happen. Maybe this is the end of his public life, but he certainly has served his country well in spite of that, the problems at Justice, which were disappointing to many of us and caused tremendous turmoil in the country. He was so strong in the Senate on so many things, just a champion, standing alone, and sort of in an amazingly feckless group of mostly men. He was serving. He was the one who just continued to call them out. And so it's a great loss to us. I have to tell you that things have unfolded for former Attorney General Jeff Sessions the way they have. But I think it's also, ironically, on the other hand, I'm sure it is very encouraging to the president to see the results this morning And so we have to weigh all of that, the encouragement that he probably needs right now. So Tommy Tuberville will be taking on Doug Jones in Alabama. Doug is, of course, the guy that really, I think, cooperated in the stealing of the seat and the slandering of Justice Roy Moore, and that's why he won as a Democrat in the state of Alabama. So now there's going to be a race between the two of them, and I think it's probably likely that Tommy Tuberville will prevail in that race, and that's probably a good thing for the people of Alabama. Meanwhile, Ronnie Jackson, who was the former doctor for the president, he's the one that the left went after and accused him of all kinds of things. And really, then the president tried to appoint him to something else, and he ended up resigning because that was tough to take. He was a private citizen, so now he has won the right to challenge the Democrat for that seat in the House of Representatives. So that was a great victory for President Trump last night, no question about it. And we'll see how those two if the two candidates will just live up to the things that their president, the one that they say they support, if they will follow his lead on policy, we'll be in good shape. Speaking of what's happening, though, you probably know, because I've told you that the Senate is in real danger of being lost by the Republicans. The Republicans only have a three-seat advantage right now, and I think they have. Sorry, I was going to look this up before I went on with you, and it just left the screen. I can't remember exactly how many seats are up, but it's huge. It's a huge amount. Guys, look up that up for me while I'm talking here. There are a huge amount of Republicans up for re-election in the Senate, many more, than Democrats. And so that makes it a very dangerous year for Republicans. And there are several states like Cory Gardner in Colorado and Susan Collins in Maine and Martha McSally in Arizona, where the Democrats are close. And, they're very close. They could take those seats. And so enter the Lincoln Project, which I haven't really talked to you about, but you may have heard about it on the news. It's a collection of what they call themselves Republican operatives. I'd say former Republican operatives. You've seen them if you watch MSNBC or CNN. Rick Wilson was a GOP strategist, a bad guy from my perspective. He was one of the bad strategists. And add to that Steve Schmidt, who was the campaign manager for John McCain in 2008, and that might tell you something. Remember, John McCain became so rabidly to the left; he was not recognizable. And a lot of that was Steve Schmidt's influence or cooperation, I guess you could say. So, George Conway, Kellyanne Conway's husband, we all know about George. He hates President Trump and never misses an opportunity to hurt President Trump in any way that he can. So, they formed what's called the Lincoln Project. There are lots more people. They've come up with tons of money. And they've decided they're not just going to oppose the president. They're going to go after these senators who have dared to support President Trump. They feel like they just need to be destroyed, and they're not really too worried, it seems, about the Republicans ever building back. They're not taking into account the fact that if the Democrats win the Senate, that the legislative filibuster will be gone. And what that means is that whatever the Democrats want to pass, there'll be no pushback and no way, no device, no rule to keep the Democrats from doing everything and anything they want to do, whether it's impeachment, global warming, climate change legislation, the most radical of radical things they will manage to do if there's nothing holding them back. So the Lincoln Project, these Republicans, quote unquote, they don't care about that. They're going to go after these senators and try to take out those three seats so that the Democrats will lose. They're already talking about supporting Joe Biden. And let me just give you an idea. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez understands clearly the implications and how the left is going to, pursue their really special plans of defunding police and, changing our political system. AOC, in her case, wants to do away with capitalism and a fully established socialism. I think probably communism, too, but she doesn't say that word. But let's listen out of her own words what she thinks about what will happen if the Democrats take over both houses and the presidency. This is clip five.
And that is really, when people say and ask me, how are you going to pass this or how are you going to pass that? I tell them we got to win the Senate and the White House. That is our legislative strategy for getting this stuff passed.
Yeah, so interestingly enough, CNN and MSNBC have taken on sort of promoting Lincoln Project. And I wanted you to hear this montage just to give you an idea of how high excited they are about the Lincoln Project. Let's listen to clip six.
Steve Schmidt, you're part of the Lincoln Project. You are destroying this president's incompetence.
And there's one level which the Lincoln Project is just trolling Donald Trump and inside his head manifestly.
The Lincoln Project is like watching a Jay-Z Nas rap battle. I mean, they don't let up on this president.
The Lincoln Project, founded by members of the GOP, dedicated to seeing Donald Trump defeated.
And their ads are terrific. They're smart. They're super fast, which is great. They troll Donald Trump.
The Lincoln Project has just been hammering Donald Trump. I think he's starting to feel for the first time, you know, what it likes to be losing.
Take a look at this new ad taunting Trump from the Lincoln Project.
Well, they're out with a devastating new TV ad.
Here's the Lincoln Project's latest ad.
Let's take a look at part of a new ad. I want to play an ad.
Here is the latest ad.
When I say new, this one's new. President's certainly not going to like waking up to that new ad.
They're all against you, Mr. President. A devastating ad from the Republican-led group, the Lincoln Project.
I don't think anybody's doubting that you guys are getting under his skin.
Look, that ad is hitting at a core flaw in Donald Trump's id.
And I think even most Democrats would concede that this is a group whose ad-making acumen is in a league of its own.
As the daughter of an ad man, a longtime ad man, I just think that the spots are powerful.
I don't give money to political organizations. I've given money to Lincoln Project because of ads like this.
And that ad was taken, was put together by the Republicans, the Lincoln Project, to take us off the air this evening.
Okay. In the business, we call that earned media. So what's happened is the Lincoln Project is producing these ads, and the networks that hate President Trump, which are all of them, have been playing the ads as a way, you know, excusing it as like news coverage of this Lincoln Project, but really just a way to play the ad so that millions of people can see the hits against President Trump. And then, of course, to add, I am a commentator. I'm supposed to be happy or sad or let you know what I think, or cheerlead or boo certain things. But news commentators are not supposed to do that. But did you hear the delight in their voices? they don't like you, President Trump. So on and on it goes. Anyway, I want to give you some other information, though, because I think you need to be encouraged. And there's an interesting article by Liz Peek in Fox News just a few days ago. And the title is Democrats Beware, Backlash Against Leftist Mob Rule is Growing. Here's what the polls say. The polls show that Democratic candidate Joe Biden's lead over President Trump is shrinking. Goya Foods CEO Robert Unanu, which I haven't even mentioned, but I want to. Let me just say, I'm going to get to that later, but let me just say that he has defended the president. He's the largest producer of Hispanic foods, the Goya products, and he was in a Rose Garden event celebrating Hispanic businesses and entrepreneurship and just a whole project in the Hispanic community to kind of lift them up. The president is sponsoring. And he talked about what a great builder President Trump is. And as a result, he's being boycotted. AOC decided he should be boycotted. So he's not stepping back. He said, you know, he's just going to take what comes. So as a result of that, lots of people have rushed to his aid. There's a GoFundMe page that's been established for him. But I think more importantly, I would just say to all of you, it's time to buy Goya, G-O-Y-A. Even if you don't use those products, like whether it's beans in the can or whatever products, tortilla shells, I'm guessing, I don't exactly know what they make. We should go out and buy that stuff and donate it to local food pantries if you don't actually use it. He needs our support, and this is the way we do this. Oh, I didn't get to this poll. A new Monmouth poll says that so people are supportive of police reform and conscious of the racial divide, but the declining sympathy with Black Lives Matter is a problem for the people in the United States and for Joe Biden. I got to come back with this poll. I've got to spend more time with it because it's not just one poll. It's several things. And I want you to know kind of what's happening. There's another poll that shows that Joe Biden is underperforming among Black voters. And it has some interesting stats, too. So I'll come back with that. I also want to talk about your favorite topic and mine, too, which is COVID, because so much is happening. And I want to fill you in on some details that you might not know. And you need to know what the truth is. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The Ministry of Preborn is dedicated to helping save preborn babies from abortion through ultrasound. And even in this time of national crisis, Preborn is there. Here's Dan Steiner, president of Preborn.
No college classes and sheltering in have led to an explosion of unplanned pregnancies. Women are panicked about their pregnancies and wanting to abort. Our crisis line is the busiest it's ever been. Here's Catherine, one of our crisis line operators.
Girls are often desperate being pregnant in this pandemic. With your help, we are able to be here for them.
The Ministry of Preborn is the largest provider of free ultrasounds in the country and the direct competition to Planned Parenthood. Would you join Preborn in the cause for life? For $140, you can sponsor 5 ultrasounds. All gifts are tax deductible. To donate, dial pound 250 and say the keyword baby. That's pound 250 and say the keyword baby. Or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com.
This is Pause to Pray, a chance to stop down from the daily noise of life and pray for our country's leaders.
Today, we pray for Betsy DeVos, U.S. Secretary of Education. She advises the president and the federal government on federal policies, programs, and activities related to education in the United States. Romans 15:22 reminds us of the importance of education. Start children off on the way they should go, and even when they are old, they will not turn from it. Right now, with this in mind, let's pray together. Almighty God, we ask you to guide Secretary of Education Betsy DeVos. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Pause to Pray is a service of this station and the Presidential Prayer Team, a nonprofit, nonpartisan ministry dedicated to encouraging prayer for our nation's leaders. To learn more, go to pausetopray.org.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
These challenging times have shown a college degree is more important than ever. But if the loss of Virginia's tuition assistance grant for certain new online students is holding you back, Liberty University is here to help. We're stepping in to replace your lost VTAG funds with our LU Tag Award and combining it with a $3,600 undergraduate transfer student scholarship or our already low first responder and military discounts to save you up to 60% on your degree. We've got this, Virginia. Learn more by texting LU Tag to 49595. That's LU Tag to 49595.
In the early days of the global pandemic, Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer was widely ridiculed for banning people from planting gardens. Many blue state governors followed her lead, cracking down on any sort of behavior they might find objectionable. In New York, out-of-state visitors must fill out detailed contact forms. In Washington state, businesses have been forced to implement a new policy: no mask, no service. Governor Whitmer, by the way, in Michigan said anyone who does not wear a face covering could face a $500 fine per violation. And one California county approved sweeping penalties for any business that violates public health orders. Politicians crave power, but it's up to we the people to keep that power in check. Unfortunately, too many of our fellow countrymen have decided to sacrifice their personal freedoms for the sake of feeling safe. Be sure to listen to my national radio show live noon to 3 Eastern, or you can download all 3 hours at toddstarnes.com.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Oh, hey, hey, hey.
Do you understand me?
Well, get the
f out of here. Do you understand me? Get up!
I wasn't trying to do it.
Get up! Do you ever
What are you doing?
Get the out
of here. You
just choked me. Stop doing
your penny
Get the out of here.
You just choked me on the ground.
That's on video.
And on video, buddy.
What was that?
Hey, we need a bunch of people down here now!
There's other people on the street!
Where's Mary Joseph? Where's Mary Joseph, huh?
Don't you f***ing slut! We're done with you!
What are you gonna do? What are they doing to my stuff?
Yeah, because you know what? You have no f***ing respect! So do you think we have respect for your f***ing son? You think we have respect for your f***ing son?
You're gonna rip me off!
Oh, he's drinking!
Oh, he's drinking!
What are you saying, bro? You wanna get
drinking!
Oh, s***! What's up, bro?
And that's legal, huh?
That's legal.
No, she's hit me as legal.
You wanna see some dumb
s***? She's hit me as legal.
What
did I do?
I just wanted you to hear what it sounds like in Portland, Oregon right now. 6 weeks they have been in the streets. It's out of control. The mayor, Wheeler, is a leftist Democrat. The president sent in troops, and Wheeler is complaining that they're the ones causing the trouble. If you watch the videos coming out of Portland, it's just stunning. In fact, there's an article in The Blaze that I just watched last night. It has like four different videos on it. And one of the things that you heard there, I know that you couldn't, there's no way to make out what you were hearing. But interestingly enough, they came up to a guy in a car. And I don't know if they, I did not see the part where they got on his car or whatever they did, but they overstepped the line and he jumps out of the car and what would be the word? Let's see. Cold cocks, I guess, maybe. The very white Antifa person or that's trying to do bad things to his car. And it turns out the passenger's black, you know, so that's a good thing because he could get away with cold cocking. And the protester's like, oh, I didn't mean it. It's funny. It's really actually kind of funny because these Antifa guys, you know, they work in groups and they like to attack helpless people. They don't like to attack like big, burly black gentlemen who are fit. And so that's what they did. They sort of made a mistake. But then as you see other, they went after federal buildings. One guy beat a policeman over the head with a hammer, doing tremendous damage. It is just horrific what's happening in Portland. It's been 6 weeks, $23 million in losses. Can you imagine? Some of you listening are from Oregon. In fact, as a matter of fact, if you are listening from Oregon and you know anything more details about what I'm saying here, what people in Oregon are thinking about this, we'll put you top of the line. And I just mean only people from Oregon. Not the rest of you. 888-589-8840, 888-589-8840. If you happen to be listening this morning from Portland or from Oregon and you have something to say about what's going on there, I would love to give you a chance to say it. So that's what's happening. There's a lot to say about it. There's a group they've got 21,000 followers. They are congealing, planning their little attacks online. It's funny how Twitter doesn't seem to mind that. You know, Twitter doesn't seem to mind that kind of organizing. They're the right kind of people to use Twitter, I guess, because that's how they're getting together and that's how they're finding out what to do. So last week, more than 100 people, both city employees and public, have sustained injuries throughout the devastation. So Ted Wheeler is saying the president did not quell it. He escalated it. His heavy-handed tactics led to serious injury and inflamed an already tense situation. And so that's how it's going to go. That's how it's going in Portland. I just feel so badly. I have a good friend out there. I'm sure it's just, can you imagine your own community? Many of you have already seen your communities destroyed and disrupted by protesters. So you can imagine it, but most of us can't yet. It's got to stop. That's all I can say. It's got to stop. And let me just say that the Zogby poll that I mentioned earlier shows that Joe Biden, because remember, Joe, you may or may not know, Joe Biden's handlers, because he does need handlers. He doesn't have enough capacity right now. Anybody that thinks he does is just silly. You can see when he tries to talk, he's not capable. But the people behind him are all about Black Lives Matter, and we have documentation about their support and how much money is flowing back and forth between the campaign and Black Lives Matter. So that's why it's important to say that a nationwide poll released on Monday indicates that former President, Vice President Joe Biden is underperforming compared to other nominees in the past. Okay, so John Zogby, the poll found that only 77% of black voters are committed to voting for Biden. 14% of black voters plan to support President Trump. 9% still haven't made up their mind. And just by contrast, Hillary Clinton received 88% of the black vote and President Obama received 93% of it. In black voters between the ages of 18 and 29 don't hold a very favorable opinion of Vice President Biden, but 88% of African Americans 65 years of age or older hold a favorable view. So that gives you an idea. You can kind of understand. I think if we knew the truth, it's going to be a lot different than that, because black Americans are seeing, especially those that live in the inner city and are poor, are seeing the ravages in their community. I can't imagine them if they fully understand supporting someone who is all about the protesters that they see and understand are not representing the best interests of the black community. So, all right, so let me go to, we do have Kathy on the line. She's from Oregon, and I want to talk to her. So here we go. Kathy, good morning. This is early for you.
Hello?
Kathy? Yeah, this is very Hi. Early for you, isn't it?
Well, let's see. It's about 5:30 here.
Okay. Well, I'm impressed that you're up and listening this early, Kathy. So your lovely, beautiful, gorgeous state is certainly under attack in Portland. I would love to know what you think and what you're seeing.
To me, I think it's disgusting. They are like two-year-old children throwing a temper tantrum. I live in northeast Oregon, where it's peaceful, it's quiet, we don't pitch fits. it's just amazing the difference that just the northwest corner of the state has gone so liberal. It breaks my heart.
Kathy, would you say that your part of the state, the northeast corner, has it always been more conservative, or do you sense any shift there? Are you and I guess along with that would be a question about masks and the kinds of things they're requiring from you in the Northeast. Is there what's happening there with that?
Well, for the most part, we are all of the rest of the state, for the most part, except Northwest Oregon, is relatively conservative. Definitely here on the whole east side, because we're farming, ranching communities, and so we know what it takes to make a living that is not just handed to us, supposedly by the voters, or at least that's my opinion. As far as masks, we are following direction of the governor, yes, because if we don't, we pay the price for that, too.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it, what do you do?
Well, you have to get, I guess what you have to do is make sure that the people that are running for Congress and City Hall and mayor and any of the elections, the schools, that you do due diligence about who it is that's running, and you work for really good candidates, and you give, and if you can't give something, you get out on the street and you hand out literature. I really do think that's what we have to do. You volunteer to be poll watchers. Those are the kinds of things that you can do, and you can share information if you're paying attention and you have like busy friends who just can't, mom of seven children working full-time, whatever. You give them information. You can be the conduit. So that's what you can do. You can only do what you can do, but you can do something. All of us can do something. So I bet you know that. You wouldn't be listening to the show. So anyway,
let me tell you, Sandy, this is the first time I've called in. I've listened for a long time, and I have to say praise God for what you do in helping us understand better what's going on from a godly perspective.
Yeah. Thank you, Kathy. That's certainly my goal, and I really appreciate that compliment. All right, well, God bless you, and now go back to listening and then take a nap, and I'll talk to you later. Thank you so much, and God bless you, Kathy.
That's later today.
Yeah, later today. Okay, 4 o'clock this afternoon, a nap. Okay, Kathy, thanks a lot. All right, well, very interesting. I want to also follow up what I was talking about, what's happening now with this backlash to what's happening on our streets. New York last night. Had another article about there was like a one-year-old child killed in a stroller, along with tons of other shootings. It's out of control in New York City with Bill de Blasio, the shootings. And so this is what I want to sit on this just for a second. So just give me a minute. Christian Cooper. Now, this is just an aside. Speaking of New York City, remember the black bird watcher who was walking in Central Park, and this female, Amy Cooper, didn't have her dog on a leash, and in that part of the park you have to have that because they're trying to protect the birds. So he asked her to put her leash on her dog, and she went berserk, and she ends up calling the police and screaming that there was a black man. What did she got? Forgot word. She said, overwhelming me or something. It was some term that, of course, hinted to the police that because he was black, that's what she meant, he was assaulting her or whatever, and he was not. He was videotaping the whole thing, and he basically just asked her to put a leash on her dog. And so she lost her job and everything. And I want to just tell you, this guy, Christian Cooper, who the bird watcher, has decided that he's not going to press charges. He said that she was crucified on social media and fired from her job, and that she'd suffered enough. And so he wasn't going to bring her any more misery. So isn't that something? I really think that's something. That's just an example of grace in the middle of all this that needs to be repeated. A black gentleman who's accused by her, you know, hinted that he's, because he's black, he's assaulting her. And I'm sure she's completely woke based on her screaming and appearance. She sounded very woke to me. But of course, when the chips are down, she was a racist. And so she lost her job, but he had mercy on her. I just think that's really cool. Okay, but that's not even the point of this article, but I wanted you to know that. Okay, so immediately after the death of George Floyd, 54% of Republicans and right-leaning independents agreed that racial discrimination is a big problem for the U.S. Weeks later, in the wake of the riots, only 40% felt discrimination was a big problem. Now, that's huge. That's because of what they saw Black Lives Matter doing. People were kind of like, wait a minute, wait. This is not what I meant. This is not what I meant when I said that we need to reform our police. We don't need to do away with our police. Reformation is different. And so, let's see. 40% of Republicans in early June thought the underlying anger of the protesters was fully justified. And later in the month, only 18% thought so. So things are shifting. It's even shifting in terms of Democrats. They're canceling all these movies, To Kill a Mockingbird, Huckleberry Finn. And you know about all the canceling. President Woodrow Wilson has been scrubbed from Princeton. Ford employees were demanding the car maker quit making police cars. And so a recent Pew Research poll shows that 42% of respondents, and this is people, both parties, just Americans, thought local police funding should stay about the same, while 31% thought budgets should actually be increased. And so, of course, Joe Biden is talking about that money from the police should be redirected. He's not talking about, he says, he's talking about defunding them, but he's stating it in a very clever way. Well, now we'll just put the money somewhere. We'll redirect it, you know, in something positive. That's what de Blasio is saying also. But people are not fooled by that. And so in two recent polls, a Reuters Ipsos poll and a Hill-Harris poll showed the gap narrowing over the last few weeks as the backlash grows against the mob. And so that's kind of that's Liz Peek in Fox News. Now, I wanted to play something else for you. Now I'm running out of time. Let's see. We have time to listen to this. This is, you know, this whole business about changing our police, the order of just changing things up a little bit. Well, you can see that the left gets marching orders and they use the same language. And Tucker Carlson did a montage on this, I think last night, at least in the last couple of days, and I want to borrow it from him and play it for you. Here's a montage of what the public, the networks are saying about changing policing. Let's listen.
The folks in law enforcement that share the goals of reimagining policing.
Reimagining policing in the 21st century.
Rethinking and reimagining policing.
Community efforts to reimagine policing.
To reimagine policing.
We have to reimagine what policing looks like.
Reimagining policing, reimagining our public safety.
Reimagine a citizen-led approach.
We can begin to reimagine law enforcement.
Reimagine public safety in this country.
What can we do to reimagine public safety?
Okay, that's enough. And then it goes on and on and on and on. It goes on and on, and they keep using the same word. They're really masters at language. You have to understand that. They're very good at calling something the opposite of what it really is by just the choice of a word. Reimagining, are you kidding? Ask the McCloskeys in St. Louis, that couple that pulled their guns trying to protect, went inside and got their guns because the 300 to 500 mobsters came through, you know, threatening them, and then came back to their house. So the police then goes and takes their guns. And they had trouble finding security to protect their home. And now it looks like they're going to be charged with something. We're not sure yet what. This is reimagining the police. Doesn't it sound like a delightful idea? Because that's what the left has in mind. The choice this year could not be clearer for us as we go to the polls in 2016. Sandy Rios in the morning.
When Jesus was arrested, Peter saw the injustice, drew a sword, and attacked a civil servant. Jesus told Peter to put away his sword because the use of violence was wrong, even though his cause was just. If we as a society condone violence to advance an agenda, we'll end up like the culture of Noah's day, corrupt, violent, and ultimately judged by God. After all, Jesus warned us that those who use the sword of violence will die by the same violent act. I'm Pastor John Miller. Visit me at churchontherock.org.
Hello, I'm Franklin Graham. Right now, our country is in trouble, and people are scared, people are afraid, and we see the violence and the injustices that are taking place. Only God can change this. This is a problem of the human heart.
If you'd like to pray with someone, call us any time of the day or night at 888-388-2683. 888-388-2683.
Call that number right now. We've got someone who will pray with you, talk with you, encourage you. God bless.
I will build my church, and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. What are gates? They are defensive tools used to keep stuff out, to keep an advancing force at bay. Too often, the enemy is successful in putting Christians on defense, when the facts are the Lord established his church as an aggressive, offensive, territory-taking body. The Lord never meant for us to sit on the sidelines of life or to cower in the corner as a result of the wickedness in our culture. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden. The light of the world cannot be contained. The Lord is building his church, and the mamby-pamby gates of hell shall not prevail against us.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Is capital punishment biblical? Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. White supremacist Daniel Lewis Lee was executed Monday for the torture and murder of an Arkansas family, including an 8-year-old girl. In 1996, Lee shot them to death, put plastic bags over their heads, weighed down their bodies with rocks, and dumped them in an Illinois bayou. God says in Genesis 9, "Whoever sheds the blood of man, by man shall his blood be shed, for God made man in his own image." Taking the life of an innocent human being is such a severe breach of the law of God and man that the murderer must be required to forfeit his own life in the interest of justice. The only question is, why did our government take 24 years to put this guy to death? If justice delayed is justice denied, the families and friends of these victims were denied justice for far too long.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Donald Trump used his press conference in the Rose Garden yesterday to provide the most comprehensive indictment of the Chinese Communist Party of any president since Lyndon Johnson. He cataloged the myriad ways in which the CCP has harmed the United States, its people, and its vital interests. Mr. Trump also documented the role played by former Vice President Joe Biden in supporting and even enabling China's rise at our expense. While contrast between the Trump and Biden policies, especially regarding what Ronald Reagan would describe as our time's existential threat to freedom, dominated the president's remarks, one of his most consequential statements during yesterday's White House event came in response to a media question. Mr. Trump declared his opposition to U.S. investments in Chinese defense companies and that we would soon see more tangible actions to prevent that. Praise the Lord. This is Frank Gaffney.
Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
As global coronavirus cases surpass 13 million, the epicenter of the U.S. outbreak has shifted south. For the first time since March, New York City reported zero deaths on Sunday. Contrast that with Florida, which has seen a 7-day rolling average of deaths more than double in 3 weeks.
We are the hot spot. The truth is that it's really bad.
On Sunday, the Sunshine State reported the highest number of new cases for any state in a single day, 15,300, a figure higher than the total number of cases South Korea tallied throughout the entire pandemic.
We've tested 2.4 million people. That is one for every nine people in the state of Florida.
As California's COVID numbers continue to climb, the state has ordered an immediate closure of indoor activities, including restaurants, theaters, and bars. And some of the state's largest counties will have to close fitness centers, worship services, hair salons, and malls. On Sunday, Texas set a new record for hospitalizations, and the federal government is sending medical personnel to help ease the burden on hospital staff.
It's a self-contained team. In other words, it has doctors, nurses, respiratory therapists, administration people, and logistics people.
Today, a statewide mask mandate went into effect in Louisiana, where new cases and hospitalizations continued to trend upward. Governor John Bel Edwards has ordered bars to cease on-site alcohol consumption to discourage young people from gathering.
We're very confident now younger people are spreading COVID-19 to older people.
Today, Atlanta Mayor Keisha Lance Bottoms responded to Georgia Governor Brian Kemp's tweet dismissing her citywide face mask order as non-binding and legally unenforceable.
When Atlanta issued its mask mandate, he took exception with it.
And Governor Kemp has been urging Georgians to wear face coverings to slow the spread of COVID-19, but he says he prefers to keep the guidance voluntary.
All right, that was Jonathan Siri of Fox, and that was a couple of days ago. It's not a new report. I just wanted you to hear it because this is an example of what you're hearing every night. And if you are not really listening, and most of you have busy lives, you're not, you know, studying this or looking at this in the way some of us are, and so it's easy to get confused. I'm confused. For heaven's sake, if I said I wasn't confused, that would be a lie. But I probably spend more time looking at it than some of you. Okay, so my goal in this next few minutes is to try to help you understand what I know for sure. Some things I don't know for sure. But when they do reports like this, and Fox is one of the worst, I've said that to you repeatedly, they often talk about the rising cases, the cases, or they'll say infections. Now, let me just say that we all carry viruses. We carry all kinds of viruses that never develop. How many of you have had chickenpox? Raise your hand. Okay, so you still carry that virus. In case you didn't know, that's what leads to shingles sometimes in later years in life. So because you have a virus, I'm not infected with chickenpox. I'm not infected. Maybe some of you medical people could help me on this, but I don't. They choose that word because it sounds worse. But COVID, you know, positive. I would probably test positive for the virus for chickenpox, and some of you would also. So testing positive for the virus really is meaningless unless you truly develop symptoms. Whatever the symptoms are now, and they seem to change that too, whether it's sneezing, coughing, fever, and, you know, whatever the symptoms are, then you're sick. Then you could say infected. So they play with those words. Meanwhile, the testing that's going on in the United States has increased by 100-fold. We are testing 100 times more people than we were in March, let's say March. And so if you test for COVID 100 times more people, you're going to get more people that test positive. That doesn't mean they are infected. They have symptoms. They're going to get sick. It means that they're carrying this little virus. That's how we do herd immunity. We carry it. We don't. Some of you get it. Some of you don't. Most of you don't get it. And most of you that get it, probably in the 90th percentile, don't ever get serious complications. The people that are at greatest risk, and this seems to be the case across the board, are the elderly, and especially if they have other kinds of conditions like heart disease, or if you're on chemotherapy or at whatever age, there are things that make you vulnerable. But if you're a healthy person, even an old healthy person, I don't think you're at very much risk. I want to play a couple of things that I could talk for the next 2 hours about this. So I'm just praying that God will help me to bring you just those things. I have seen so many evidences of panic in people now. In fact, I should stop just to say that we were, you know, in Mayo Clinic last week. I told you that we go every year. They have an executive health program, and we've been part of it for 10 years. And so with that health program, they give the finest. I always say Mayo Clinic is probably, it's the model for healthcare everywhere. It is just an amazing thing to behold. And yet what we beheld last week was Mayo Clinic cooperating in scaring people to death. required masks everywhere, which is, you know, hospitals are fanatical about that right now, and they're not any less fanatical. So what happens is people then are rude to each other and unkind. You can't even see if they're smiling. They don't make facial contact. That's what's happening everywhere. But that was the case at Mayo. But things like this. We in the elevators, they had squares blocked off so that you could only have like five people in an elevator. And if you weren't paying attention to those boxes and you started to get on the elevator, people would yell like, "Don't get on! You can't get on! You can't get on!" Just like that, because they're so concerned about those boxes, and we can't have more. Somehow, scientifically, they figured out that if you have more than five people on the elevator, COVID goes crazy. You know, and I noticed in the executive lounge, and you can get some food in there. People, you know, were all masked up, but you know, when they're eating, they're not masked up. So I just want to ask, and I would ask all of you too, does COVID, like, you know, like when you are eating and drinking, does it just automatically say, "I'm not going to infect anybody right now because they're eating, because they're drinking"? Is that what happens? Is that why we're okay, able to take our masks off and eat together? Does that make sense to you? I don't think so. I was required to take a COVID test. It's actually the third one that I've had the privilege of having. If you've had one, it hurts. If you have that swab, it goes way, way back up in the base of your brain, I think. And it's painful. The one that I had at Mayo, without my permission, they sent me up for testing. And I thought it was something else. And lo and behold, lucky me, I got a COVID test, and it hurt. So then they gave me a card, and I thought, well, at least, you know, I'll have this card that says I've been tested. And it came back, I didn't have COVID. I know that's a shock, but I didn't have COVID. So I thought that when I went into the hospital the next day or later that day that maybe I shouldn't have to wear a mask, you think? And maybe I shouldn't have to have my temperature taken or all the precautions, or, you know, because I have a card. I have a card that says I don't have it. But no, it meant nothing. It meant nothing. Because you see, I could take that test and go out into the hallway, and if I took my mask off, I might catch it right again. I might get it immediately. I would need to be tested maybe every hour on the hour to really know if I was COVID-free. It's nonsense. It is nonsense. And so the stats that they're giving us right now, when they talk about all these outrageous numbers that are going up, and notice they're not in New York right now. They're not on the East Coast. That's where the center of the, you know, alleged pandemic was taking place earlier. And I'm not saying, don't misunderstand my mockery to say I don't think it's serious or that people have died or gotten really sick. It's nothing. I'm not saying that. I am saying, I'm declaring to you right here and now that they are exaggerating what's happening, and they're using it for a nefarious purpose. And the thing that bothers me the very most is that many of my friends and family members and people across the globe, especially Christians, are falling for the whole thing. Let me just put it like this. There are about 325 million people in the United States. Do you know how many COVID deaths there have been? Now, death's pretty serious. I mean, we all can get the flu, a cold, COVID, whatever, coughing, fever. We get sick, you know? We just do get sick. So, but only 135,000 of us have died of COVID. Guess how much of the population that is? That's 0.0004. So for all of this, we're shutting down everything. We are causing people to lose their jobs, their businesses, so that they can't feed their families. When we were in Rochester, two things. We went to a restaurant and interacted with the sweetest waitress, and all masked up, of course. She has to, you know. Rochester, I think, I'm not sure they've had any deaths. I looked that up while I was there. But you'd think that body bags are being carried out of every home, like the bubonic plague. But no, not really. I don't think there was anyone in Mayo Hospital being treated for COVID. Now, I could be wrong about that. There may have been a handful. But no, this is like ridiculous. Kabuki theater, as Senator Paul calls it. And so you have a 0.0004 chance of dying. And on the basis of this, we are putting like this young waitress that I started to tell you about, who's just delightful, so sweet. And then she started to tell us that her tips for the last 3 months have been down so far. She's a single mother with two children. She has a 14-year-old daughter and an autistic son who's about eight. She can barely survive. She's at half tips. And then she started to cry. And I, in my interactions with hospital employees, doctors primarily, because I could not be silent, as you can imagine, I had one interaction, and the doctors are great, and they're not all down with this, but the few that were, you know, all in, man, it was great. One doctor told me she loved it. She hoped she could do it the rest of her career. She talked to me through her mask and her plastic veil. I said, yes, but doctor, you have a job. You have a job. I have a job. You're doing harm. You're not supposed to do harm as a doctor. You may think you're safer, there are less germs, but you are hurting people in a different way. In fact, I had just a stat this morning about how many opioid deaths and suicides have been taking place in the last few months. There is a price for what we are doing. And that's why I want to say to those of you that are Christians, there is so much involved here. Not only are you, in many cases, believing a lie, but it is not natural for us to be tucked away. I've told you before, this is not God's way. We are not meant to live. What did God say? It's not good that man should be alone. What do we do when we punish children? We just send them to their room. What do we do when we punish criminals? We put them in solitary confinement. This is unnatural. It is dangerous and deadly. If this were the bubonic plague, where people were dying left and right of us, it would be different. But it is not. That is a lie. And let me give you an example, because I'm going to run out of time here. Now Florida is the center. Florida has more deaths. They're dying. It's horrible down in Florida. But only they're not dying. The problem is they're not dying. And I'll give you an example. A Fox report, Fox 35 from in Florida from yesterday, clip one. Clip one.
The Florida Department of Health releasing its daily coronavirus testing report, showing a statewide positivity rate of 11%. But Fox 35 quickly noticing some shocking positivity rates. Countless labs reporting 100% positivity. That means every single person tested was positive. We sifted through the reports to find local testing sites with high numbers. Like this Centricare, 83 people tested and all positive. Check out the Orlando VA, a positivity rate of 76%. NCF Diagnostics has a location in Alachua, 88% of tests coming back positive, and 98% for Orlando Health. How could that be? We investigated these astronomical numbers, contacting every location mentioned. Orlando Health, the only to respond, confirming errors in the report. Its positivity rate is, in fact, only 9.4%. Now, we just heard back from the Orlando VA. They are looking into the numbers.
All right, I'm going to interrupt because I'm going to run out of time here. Let me just say that what's happening, nobody, you'd never get 100% of all of the people you're testing having something. This is a complete and utter sham. And they're reporting this because the Republican convention is going to be here and they're trying to shut the state down. They're trying to get Ron DeSantis. It's as simple as that. And if you're in a state right now, I know many of you are, even Mississippi is shutting down again. Look at the population of your state. Look at the deaths, and even that you can't trust, but let's take them all that they claim are COVID. Divide the deaths by the number of population and you'll see the astronomically small chance of you dying from COVID in your state, and you will understand that you are being manipulated. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.